So, talking about jobs that bore you, Tom. So, you were doing well at the BBC and you quit that, and you were doing well at Sony and quit that. Tell us a bit of your life history, because I find it fascinating that you were able to give up two things that probably your parents would be saying, don't be so stupid, keep up with that job, you'll be earning a six-figure salary in 20 years' time.
Well, that's
Tell
interesting,
us
isn't
about
it?
this.
Yeah, well, I suppose it all started because I was fascinated by magic as a child, and to me, a radio with a voice coming out of it, we called them wireless in those days, and a TV with an image on it just fascinated me. How could we possibly do that? So I went and studied electronics at university, or electricity, as I prefer to call it nowadays, at a university, because I wanted to know how all this stuff worked. And I did a my final year project was quite fascinating. I designed a system to find the Loch Ness Monster, a video system to find the Loch Ness Monster, would you believe? So that was my final year project. So at that time, television wasn't taught at university. This was back in about 1979. So when I went for an interview at the BBC and the ITV at that time, they went, "Oh, this bloke knows TV. We'll give him a job." I got offered two jobs. So before I even turned, before I left the BBC, I turned down a job at ITV. So I got this dream job at the BBC at 21, working on outside broadcasts with luminaries like David Coleman, Dana, Rod Hull. One of my claims to fame is that I've actually had my hand up emu. How about that for a claim to fame? There used to be about four or five emus, and when they in lunchtime, when all the actors went to for a break, we used to go downstairs and have emu fights, which was great fun. So anyway, that's by the way. So it was serious hard work, I've got to say. But no, I just I was put up for promotion, and they said, "We're going to promote you and take you on to this next level." And they basically, someone in London said, "No, the guy's only been there. He hasn't been there 2 years, so he can't qualify for this upgraded post." So I went, "Well, sod you then." I looked around, found a great job at Sony with more money, went down there, and then I got headhunted because Channel 4 was just starting up in London, and someone offered at 24 to, I think 23 or 24, to double my salary. So I went and I joined this company up in London. 3 months later, they went bust, and I went, "Oh dear, what am I going to do now? Should I go back? Should I go back to Sony, which I could have easily done, or should I go forward?" So I went freelance in London just at the time that Channel 4 was starting, and actually within 2 or 3 years I had a six-figure salary, I've got to say. So a very young chap earning a load of dosh on the in London with the streets paved with gold just at the right time. So I've had all that, been there and done it, had my own company at 30, manufacturing widgets for the broadcast industry, shipping worldwide. And I have to say that I had a great time. It was just fantastic. I learned lots about the technology. I know all about how this, all this technology that we're talking about right now. I kind of know the mathematics about how all the compression algorithms work, and how we get video signals down small bits of broadband cable. So I understand that technology, and had a great time learning about it. But I always think that sticking in the same job now, it just seems like, it's dull. Why would you want to do that? Why would you want to not learn more and more and more? And if your employer or your situation doesn't allow that, why not move on?
Wow, and but then, how did you let all that go and become an author and an inspirer? Because that seems like a very brave step to take.
Well, actually, I built. I sold my company. I sold my broadcast company to another company in the early 90s. And they actually, as a merger company, so I became from went from like being the chief exec to just being the technical director, which is great because I didn't have the responsibility of running the company. And as technical director, I said in the early 90s, there's this thing called the internet just about to start. We need to get into it, and they all told me it wouldn't take off. And so we had a little bit of a falling out, and I went and did gardening leave for a couple of years because I had a little non-compete clause. And within a few years, I came back and I formed an internet company and learned all about the internet. And this is when we still had like modems that were doing, 33 kilobits, not bytes, but bits. And then in the mid 2000s, I just got fed up working. I got really stressed out. I had a mini blowout, mid 40s, had a mini blowout, threw my toys out the pram, and for the first time in my life, when it when my life had been, falling into opportunity after opportunity, like I just described, I decided to give up a perfectly good job without one to go to. And then just to compound everything, we went on holiday to the Caribbean, a real plush holiday in the Caribbean. And while I was on the plane going over there, I wrote my first book, 100 Years of Ermyntrude, by accident. Didn't plan to write it. I wrote it as a favour for a graphic designer who wanted some words to show her images off. And I got back and we published it online. People started downloading it and ended up walking around London in a bra for 26 miles with 15,000 women as a result of writing it, because it mentioned breast cancer and it got adopted by a breast cancer charity. And then, blow me, people started approaching me saying, "Tom, could you help me write? You published a book. Could you help me write my book?" And I went, "I guess so. I can, turn my hand to anything." And before I knew it, I'd become an author's mentor.
And it just sort of grew organically.
It did, yeah. And I didn't know at the time I channeled the book, but I was in floods of tears on the plane. I was absolutely in floods of tears, which I now realise what happens when you get touched by the angels, because they got so much love. And I just couldn't stop the tears flowing. It's a beautiful book. And as a techie, of course, I've made it into an MP3 and an MP4, and it's even an iPhone app, so you can't put a good old techie down. So I used it as an example of how you can repurpose output onto different platforms, including print. But what happened then surprised me, because people would then approach me that were blocked. And as an engineer, I go, "Okay, so you're blocked. Well, as an engineer, how could we deal with that?" So that's when I went and learned a bit of hypnosis, a bit of NLP, a bit of past life regression. And I guess I've become now a spiritual innovator, because I take these techniques that people call a bit woo woo la la, and I
Right.
think, well, how can we combine that technique with that technique and come up with a real world solution to do some good stuff? So I'm still engineering, but with using some kind of metaphysical tools, I guess.
And I think, Tom, that's what I liked when I read The Art and Science of Lightbulb Moments, because one half of the book is very scientific and looks into how your brain works and the nuts and bolts, if you like. And the other part talks very much about the esoteric, but you do it in a way that someone who was skeptical or very left brain, if we say, they would maybe miss the esoteric stuff or would just try them as exercises rather than saying, "Oh no, that's woo woo." And I loved the Wizard of Lightbulb Moments because that kind of hints at the esoteric, but doesn't put people off, if you like.
For sure, yeah. No, I like that too. It's great. It's a
We
great
do.
moniker.
We have missed a question in the chat room, going back to what we were discussing a week or so ago. What are Tom's views on of the way that some say the mind is more in touch with our natural surroundings than we might think, talking about conditions such as sad, etc.?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we are. There's lots of things going outside us. Astrology's kind of true. That the way that I do a program called Writing in Tune with the Moon, and we're in different energetic states as the moon orbits around the Earth, and that's the closest astronomical body to us, and that's got a massive effect on us and our water. So why can't other energies have states? So we can have external states. We can be in an area of bad energy as well. So I've been told that because Manchester's in a quite a bit of a depression, it's actually a very depressing place to be, which is why you have people like Morrissey and Oasis, who write their tunes in the minor key, coming from Manchester. It's probably why I got out of Manchester, I guess, come to think of it, I guess. And why I live on a hill. So yeah, we could say so we are. We can be influenced by other things. We can be obviously influenced by other people. So I'd say to anybody, if you're having not financial hardship but financial difficulties, just mix with some more successful people. It leaks across. If you go out and you mix it, if people are sad, they'll make you sad. If you go to do the same thing and mix with the same people that are all staring into their pints of an evening saying, "Woe is me," then you'll feel sad. But there are techniques you can do to protect yourself, to put a shield around you. They all start with breathing, and there are things you can do so you can become immune to certain external influences. But you know what? I have bad days. And when I have bad days, what I don't do is make any decisions and don't be creative. And one thing I have found is that I'm absolutely useless at trying to write a book in autumn, and I'm really good in spring. So I just write all my books in spring, which is like springing forward. And I don't give myself a hard time for not writing a book in the autumn, but I think about it then. And I'm still creative in other areas. I might make products and websites and things like that, but and I work with other people that don't have that same sort of seasonally affected disorder, if you like. And go with it. So you just got to be aware of energies because they're real. They're as real as, you know, the chair I'm sitting on and the computer I'm staring at right now.
Because I remember my guide telling me once that my energy drops when the sap drops,
Yeah.
and that a lot of people does, because our energy goes down as the sap goes down and we rest, and then our energy comes up as the sap comes back up and
Absolutely.
life is restored.
You got it, yeah. So what you need to do is have two places, one in South Africa and one in England, just migrate southwards once every year. That's my dream.
Well,
That's a
we
good
could have
plan.
one in New Zealand, but we don't fancy it. Where would your other house be, Nikki?
Yeah, I think I'd go to America. I think I'd have a house in Sedona.
Right, now,
You
Nikki,
know.
you wanted to talk to Tom about cooking, so I'm just going to lay down under the desk, and if you could let me know when it's over, that'd be fantastic.
Well, you know, as an accountant, I was always accused of cooking the books, but that was as near to cooking as I ever got.
You were burning accountancy books. Surely that's against the law.
Yeah, well, it was just a cunning, you know, plan to get more firemen into the office, really. But there we go. No, Tommy, no, you're like I say, I said you had two books. Apologies, because I have 100 Years of Ermyntrude in my in my bookshelf. But a book that came out recently was The Flavours of Thought, Recipes for Fresh Thinking. And as you said, it's based on the major arcana in the tarot. So, you know, you were talking earlier about it being a kind of Trojan horse book. Can you tell our listeners what the book's about?
Yeah, I came across the esoteric tarot about 4 or 5 years ago, specifically a chap called Paul Foster Case, who passed away in the mid-50s. And I really resonated with his work so much. Actually, so much so that when I read his book, I was actually vibrating. I was having one of those out-of-body experiences as I with my eyes open reading the book. And it almost appeared like I knew the book and I'd read it before. And, you know, maybe that's that going to that thing we said before, either there's a bit of Paul Foster Case in me, or I'm resonating with his DNA across space and time. It doesn't matter what the mechanism is, but I certainly thought I know these words, and they were reenacting in me. But it was a really complicated book. It's a magical book as well. Every time you read the book, a new bit appears that wasn't in there before, which is kind of interesting. So it's like one of these Harry Potter books where the words change on the page. And as soon as I realised, as soon as I realised how that was, I thought, I wonder how you do that. I had a light bulb moment about how to do it, and I knew how to do it, and I know how to do it now. And it's teachable. And so what I did with the light bulb moment with Flavours of Thought was I took his exposition of the major arcana, and I took all the fusty language away from it. And I found out, I didn't know this till afterwards, but I channeled pre-tarot. So I went back in time to before the tarot was formed, and over time the tarot has had loads of Chinese whispers, a bit like the Bible. So the Bible now is nothing like the original scripture, even though some of the stories might be the same, the parables and the events and what have you. But it's very much Chinese whispers handed down over the ages. Tarot's had that then as well. There's loads of different tarot schools, loads of different tarot sets. So what I channeled the original energies behind each card, and then I wrote up about them in and as each of them is an intelligence, and we're powered by 22 intelligences, and they work as agencies through us. And just so you know, on my wall behind me, the video is up, which isn't. There's a map of the tarot, and just above it is the human genome, which has got 22 main chromosomes. And I think that that can't be that has to be a coincidence that needs to be looked into. So we've got these 22 agencies that work through us. They work at three levels. They work at the higher self level, seven of them. That's cards 15 to 21. Cards 8 to 14 work at the unconscious mind level, and cards 1 to 7 work at the at the conscious mind level. The Fool, which is card zero, is synonymous with the light bulb moment, the obvious. And when you combine these things in triplets, so you pick a card from the bottom row, which is the higher self thought or flavor, and then you moderate it using the middle row, which is the unconscious mind flavor, and get to the top row, which is the conscious mind flavor, you always end up at a conclusion which is the obvious. And these became the recipes in the book. So one half of the book's about the flavors, and the other half of the book is how you can concoct recipes with them. And these recipes are a posh modern day word for what is effectively a spell, and they work. They're really powerful.
Why?
Yeah.
Wow.
How about that?
You really are the Trojan horse, aren't you?
Yeah, and I'll be honest with you, that none of this I planned, Deb. So I'm as amazed by it than people that I speak to, if you know what I mean. Because it's not like I came up with any of this. It's almost like I've been gifted it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Because people sometimes will come up to Nikki and I after an event and they'll go, "Oh, you're absolutely amazing." And we'll either go, "Can you remind us what we said? Because we don't remember," or we're still standing there. We can be channeling our guides going, "Wow." At the same time, we're actually speaking, thinking, "This is utterly, mind-blowing."
Exactly.
You know?
And I know what happened is Tom Tom took a step back and became the observer and the sort of the mechanistic wizard, if you like, the guy that's quite techie and can make websites happen. And then the guides are working through me and giving me this stuff. And by the way, I've been completely, can I say the word bollock on air as well as anal? Is that possible? I've been bollocked by spirit vehemently twice by saying, "We've given you all this bloody stuff. Why don't you just get on and do something with it?" So they've been working very hard to encourage me to get going.
It's my favourite word.
There you go. Oh, I like this show. You can use proper words on it. It's great.
Yeah, not too many. We haven't been on air very long. It might took us off.
I don't think the Americans know what that word is, actually, to get away with it.
It's just good old Anglo-Saxon.
Yeah, absolutely.
Go on.
I was just going to ask Tom, could we practice a recipe? Gary in the chat room always likes to come on air and talk to us.
Yeah.
Would it be possible for someone to try a recipe live on air?
let's do, if someone's got an issue, a problem, or an opportunity, what I'll do is Tom will take a step back, I'll use the flavors, and we'll come up with a resolution. How about that sound? How's that sound?
Come on, volunteers.
Right.
Let's see what happens. Let's
Gary, come.
see. Yeah,
Let's
Gary's
just
probably under
Gary.
the table now going, "I must be more shy and retiring in future."
Get your
Wow,
Skype
serve
off.
him right. I Everyone's do
gone
find it,
silent.
don't you find it interesting how so many themes run through everything in life, Tom? As you said, the genomes and the tarot, and it's just incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, can I share another one with you, which is quite interesting?
Go on then.
There's the same number of stars in the galaxy as there are neurons in each of our brains. Now, that can't be a coincidence, can it?
How do we know that?
Oh, we've had a count.
Yeah, you've been standing out there going, one, two,
Two,
don't
three,
disturb.
four.
Yeah. 5,999,000. No, I don't want a cup of tea. One, two.
But it's to
And I
me
know.
to me it's it, they're the same quanta, they're roughly the same level, therefore that has to be investigated. And what it relates to is the holographic nature of our universe.
Because there was a photograph that someone shared on Facebook, and I posted it on my page, so if anyone wants to find it. But it was a photograph of a brain cell and then a photograph of the solar system. And they were so similar, it was spooky.
Oh, can I give you another one then?
Go on then.
This is even spookier. There's a thing in the brain called Yakovlevian torque, right? And what it is, if you look at the brain from above, we haven't got two halves of a walnut. The front of our left brain has started to curl round in front of our right brain, and the back of our right brain has started to curl round behind our left brain. And I said before that we've got a hologram of our right brain inside our left brain, and a hologram of our left brain inside our right brain. So imagine that the holograms were two dots, And what's happening is our brains are morphing into the yin and yang symbol.
Why?
So when
Gary's being our hero, guys. Go on. Yeah. Go on, Tom.
Yeah, so that's it. So we are yin yang. Our brains look like a yin yang symbol physically.
Wow,
that's amazing.
But they're never drawn like that. You know, you've got to get a brain out of the skull and have a little play with it, as old Swedenborg did.
Well, I don't need my
out. I need a microscope. Go on.
Well, we share one, so how would that work?
Exactly. Because I remember Steve Judd telling me that the sun looks the same size as the moon because it's 360 times further away and 360 times bigger.
That's a great coincidence, isn't it?
So the sizes, you know, everything falls in that golden ratio, which is absolutely fascinating.
Isn't it great? Yeah, I love that one. I love that coincidence. It's in my novel, which I'm going to finish off this year.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know what Gary's up to. Have we got Gary yet, Darren?
I'll have a look, but you know what his system's like.
If not, you could just ask the question in the chat room. I've switched off a browser so I can't see it, and you could read it out to me, and then I'll do the recipe over the air. Yeah.
Right,
yeah,
so what questions do you want?
I want anybody that's got an issue, an opportunity, or a problem, and I'll shed some light on it live.
I've got Gary's coming online now. Okay. Be warned, Tom, he's got a bit of a Dalek-y voice. It's not because he's got a throat infection, it's because he's got worse bandwidth than what you have. So.
Okay, no worries.
Right, I'm going to add him to conference. He's a bit shy as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Right.
I was drinking wine then.
Right, hopefully. Come on.
I'm here.
Oh,
hello,
right.
Babes.
Never mind.
Hello, how are you?
Hiya, Gary.
You're right there.
You really are our hero, aren't you?
I don't know, am I? I missed it. Just as I heard my name mentioned, my Explorer closed down.
So I'm not surprised. Your computer, mate.
Yeah.
Tom, what was it you needed from Gary?
First off, hi, Gary. How are you doing? Thanks for coming on air.
That's all right. No problem. Good to meet you. Sort of virtually, anyway.
So have you got something that's sort of burning a hole in the back of your head, something you'd like some enlightenment on, Gary, something you'd like some new perspective on, something you'd like tomorrow to do differently than you're doing today?
Yes, I'd. It's nothing specific, really, like tangible. It's kind of, I worry about everything a lot.
Okay.
And I'd like not to, you know. I worry about worrying. It keeps me awake at night, you know, so
just like my mother-in-law, she worries when she's got nothing to worry about. How about that?
Yeah.
In case there's something and you've forgotten what it is.
Life can't be perfect, isn't it? Because then you've got to worry about it. So let's take worrying, shall we? Can we just take that at a kind of high level? So worrying about worrying.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I'm going to do this completely. We're going to do this pseudo-random. Can you give me a number between 15 and 21?
18.
A number between 8 and 14?
10.
10. And a number between 1 and 7?
5.
5. Okay, so you don't know what these flavours of thought are, do you? But your unconscious mind does. And knew that these are absolutely perfect for you. Now, in the same way, Nikki, Deb, you might be doing a tarot reading and someone just picking the cards out, okay? So what you picked out the intelligence of the moon, which is called reception. You picked out replication, which is the wheel of fortune. And you picked out number 5, connection, which is the hierophant. So you picked those 3 cards out. That's the moon in the tarot, the wheel of fortune, and the hierophant. Now, we're not going to worry about the tarot, because this book just takes them down to their base sense. So basically, what we're going to do is, first off, think about the worry in a completely different way. So let's think about the worry as an energy. And it's not there as something evil. It's there to tell you about something, about you or about something external to you. So the first thing we do is that the next time, Gary, you feel worried, scan your body and scan what's around you. And just think and ask your unconscious mind what the source might be, okay?
Yeah.
And then what I want you to do is that notice that this has been replicated. This is a pattern, okay? And notice the next time you worry, how similar it is to the worry you had before. because there will be a pattern there. Even though it's like two different things, completely different things get you worried, there'll be a pattern between them. And that's where the that's where the fifth flavour comes in. When the fifth flavour of connection comes in, you go, aha. So all this worry, all this turmoil has just been so you can notice about worry. Now, here you go. Here you go. And in the same way that we talked about my life and I went and did some broadcasting and some internet, that was completely irrelevant in a way. That was only so that when I got into my 40s and my 50s, I could start channeling some really good messages that I knew about how to broadcast them. So that was all pre-stuff. And all the stuff that you've had about worry can just be so that you can then go and do something wonderful with it. Now, I don't know what you do for a living. Gary, you mind telling me?
Well, I'm kind of in between things at the moment. I look after my wife at the moment because she's very ill. So we've not long moved into a new area. Okay. So I'm that's my full-time job, really, at the moment. Oh, so I'm a carer for my wife.
Good on you, fella. And so, but if you could you imagine doing something that would and you'd enjoy? And you can imagine doing something that would be worthwhile?
Oh, yeah. I'm a marine engineer by trade. And I would love to get back into doing something like that.
And what age are you right now?
41.
41, right. So 42 is when the third eye switches on, right? So imagine that all this worry could be all about a light bulb moment I'm just going to share with you right now. Imagine if you became the expert at worry and you wrote a book about worrying and became a worry counsellor and could help loads of other people with their worries because you'd been there and got the T-shirt.
That is amazing, actually, because I think it's something I programmed myself as a kid. I don't know where it came from, but I would sit there and worry that I've got to do something. I've got to do that, but I'll do it in a minute. And that minute never came, so I find myself worrying about it the next day.
Gotcha.
So as an adult now, rather than sitting and worrying about it, I have to get up and do it. Otherwise, gotcha. I think up stuff to worry about. It's ridiculous.
There you go.
This is
all teaching you about your internal thought processes, Gary, and thinking about thought in a completely different way. That the thoughts aren't necessarily real. They're not necessarily. They're just messages that have been sent for you to receive in the cerebellum. That's where they come in, these thoughts. And once you learn about how and why they come in, and you see the pattern and you make the connection between the pattern, that's when you have the light bulb moment of what you can do with it.
Yeah.
And you can take that into business, you can do it personally, you can write a book, you can, you know, generate a platform career. I didn't plan to be, you know, a platform speaker about light bulb moments. That wasn't on the career path when I did electricity at university, but all I've done is I've allowed it to happen by taking action. And here's the thing, because the brain can only do one thought at a time. If your thought is concerned with worry, that has the effect of blocking the light bulb moments from coming through. Remember I said before, if your brain is active, it can only have that one thought at a time. So I'm going to give you so your recipe is reception, replication, and then connection, leading to the obvious. But I'm going to give you the link I put in the chat room before, the tomevans.co/free downloads. Find how to quieten your mind. And that's your tonic. And how to quieten your mind is how you quell all worry. And when the worry comes in, you react to it in a completely different way. Now, what you do is you say, thank you, worry. What do I need to pay attention to? Thank you for turning up. And when you know how to do that, think about how many millions of people you can help.
So I was going to say it's basically a way of turning something you consider to be a negative into a positive that can help other people.
I wouldn't even call it a negative. I'd just call it a thing. I'll tell you for why, right? There is more matter in the universe that is not self-aware that can't worry. It's absolutely magical that we can be here and have negative thoughts and do evil things to each other. That is quite magical. Now that same, we are sentient stardust, and that same stardust that can kill and maim and hurt can also love and heal and inspire.